everyone, and welcome to it. It's the Daily David Collin Podcast for the 20th day of November, Wednesday. We're halfway through the week, which means we're halfway to, well, not halfway. It means Thanksgiving is next week, which actually it doesn't mean Thanksgiving is next week because Thanksgiving is next week regardless. Forget I said anything. Welcome to the program. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. It was another action-packed day of, actually not really action-packed. My God, even I couldn't sit through all that crap. The testimony didn't end until well into the 8 o'clock hour on day 3 of week 2. 4 witnesses, I think. I mean, it's just a mess. It's like a story problem and just as effective, I think, the impeachment hearings. What an absolute mess. It actually was a really bad day for Democrats, because their star witness this time and their star chairman of the committee were both exposed as frauds and liars, both plain for the world to see. Now, the world wouldn't have seen it because there's no way that the media, the gatekeepers of access to speaking to the world, will never allow that sort of stuff to get out on the nightly newscasts. But if people happen to watch it or go on social media, it is stunning and telling, and it was a moment that a normal human being would be embarrassed by. You know, when you're caught in a flat-out lie, we've all been there. We're all human beings. We have all lied, and anybody who says they haven't is lying. But when you're caught with your pants down, maybe Bill Clinton would, this would be an appropriate scenario for him, but when you're caught with your pants down, both literally and figuratively, or either one, the normal thing that you do is you either, you shut up, you apologize, you're caught, it's over, the jig is up. But being chairman means never having to say you're sorry. Being chairman means never having to address the issue. There was, I'll explain it all. Let's just say that Adam Schiff had a Schiff-eating grin as he was recognizing and realizing that he had, he'd stepped in it. He stepped in a big pile of Schiff. Yes, there's going to be a lot of Schiff jokes today, because if you have to say the name Adam Schiff a bunch of times, you have to make Schiff jokes because he's a Schiff head. He's full of Schiff. So, yeah, get ready for that. We also have a major screw-up by another news organization that should embarrass them, but it doesn't really embarrass the left. It should embarrass them on many levels. I'll explain, plus all sorts of other things. If you want to enter to win, by the way, the Jerome Hudson book, signed, 50 Things They Don't Want You to Know, all you got to do is email me, Derek@DailyCaller.com. Let me know you want to do that. A bunch of you have entered. I have not responded because I haven't gone through my emails to respond, but I have marked the ones that need responses, ready to respond, and will shortly. But you've all been entered, I swear. I promise you, you're all entered. Don't worry about that. And then look forward to Friday's interview with Rich Lowry of National Review. So, it's a good time. It's a good week. It's a long interview, and it's a good interview, because it'd be much worse if it were a long and boring interview, or a short and, I guess short and riveting is okay. This is long and riveting, so it's win-win for everybody involved. So we'll get to that on Friday's show, and I can tease it and say it because we've already recorded it. Okay, let's get into the business of the business before we get into the business of the day. Joining me on the phone right now is the webmaster of GetTheTea.com, the head honcho of Life Change Tea, Ronnie McMullen. Welcome to the program, Ronnie.
How you doing, Derek?
I'm doing great, and it's in no small part thanks to your product. Tell me and tell everybody the benefits that they're missing out on by not choosing to use your product.
Life Change Tea is like a digestive aid. Now, people might think, oh, my digestion's great, but usually that's not a truth. All disease, according to Socrates, started in the gut. So when you have a digestive healthy tract, intestinal tract that's doing very well, then you start doing very well. People don't even know that in the cold and flu season, which is we're approaching that quickly, that when you have a cold or flu, your digestion slows way down and it actually can start making you constipated. So with that, get the tea. Our Super Strength Tea does a wonderful job in helping things move a little better. In fact, we have the tagline, the tea that makes you go. And there's two facets to that. One, obviously, it will help you with bathroom visits. But the other thing is it will actually give you energy. So it makes you go with giving you lots of energy. And the tea tastes really great. So it's really important to do this on an ongoing basis, not just, you know, one time, you know, get a car wash and we're good to go, but all the time. So it's, I take it every day, have for years and years, and thank God for that.
I think people need to realize, Ronnie, that health is not just about what you put into your body, but making sure your body has the ability to absorb the good things out of that. And that's where Life Change Tea comes in. It helps with all of that. The website is getthetea.com. The man is Ronnie McMullen. Ronnie, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
And don't forget to enter the promo code Derek in the coupon code at checkout, and you get 10% off your whole order. You can't beat that deal. Promo code Derek, 10% off. And it helps the show, and it helps you. So, you know, if you don't want to help the show, help yourself. And if you really hate yourself, help the show. Whatever it is, I appreciate any help you can offer. That's why the Patreon site is up. Patreon.com/Derek Hunter Podcast. All right, let's get into the Shift Show. Ladies and gentlemen, we're all stars now in the Shift Show. It was an incredibly long day. They always say that life is a marathon and not a sprint. Yesterday was a slog, and it seemed, you know, we should be grateful. We should have these hearings every day of every year, because then our life expectancy would seem like 15 times longer. It really was unbelievable. We had Vindman up there, Lieutenant Colonel, he insisted on being called Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman. He was really the star witness of this whole show. And that's where I want to focus most of my time, because he's the one who was so moved, so upset by the phone call between President Zelensky of Ukraine and President Trump of the United States of America, which is a fact I'm not thoroughly convinced Alexander Vindman is ready to accept. And he started this whole ball rolling. He was on the call, so upset, moved to tears almost by the call, that he ran off and violated his job duties and spread the word about the call far and wide, until he talked to a lawyer who said, you probably shouldn't be telling people this stuff. And then he stopped telling people. He was so upset he wanted to file a complaint. He didn't know what to do. He wasn't sure. But the one thing he didn't do was go and talk to his boss, which is weird, I would say. You know, chain of command and all being important in the military. But Mr. Vindman seems to only like the bits of his job and his responsibilities that help him, that work for him, that fit his agenda. And the rest of them, actually, watching this guy, before we get to any of the audio, he really comes off as one of those people who you can't tell anything to. They're not interested in what you have to say. Everybody knows somebody like this, whether you have a PhD and you work in an office at a think tank and sit around and you're with a bunch of smug people who think they're better than everybody else, or even when I was roofing or I was doing concrete work or electrical work, there's always somebody on a job or a job site who really thinks that when they leave the porta potty, it smells like a meadow, when in reality, it smells like Schiff. And Vindman comes off as that kind of... I did warn you that there was going to be a lot of Schiff jokes today. Vindman comes off as that kind of guy. You can't tell him anything. If you point out where he's incorrect, if you say, no, you're wrong on this one, he's not interested in what you have to say. It is arrogance coupled with ignorance. And I'm not calling him ignorant. I think he knows sort of well what his job was. He's not really sure on the chain of command again and how U.S. policy works, but that sort of comes in on the arrogance side. But there are people out there who are A, educated beyond their intelligence and simply can't cope with anything outside of their scope of what they claim to already know. But there are people who they're very smart in one area and dumb in others. And they have no interest or ability to accept when they're wrong in the area where they're very smart. That's their whole identity is sort of based on their intelligence and their one area of expertise and their one area of speciality. And that's kind of what Vindman is. There's nobody who can tell him anything about Ukraine. He knows it all. He knows it better than anybody. Don't you know he was born in Ukraine? Don't you know his roots, his identity appears very wrapped up in Ukraine? So if you were to point out something about Ukraine where Alexander gets something wrong, I don't think, especially as a layman, I don't think he would accept that from you. I don't think, unless you can show some serious credentials, then maybe. But in general, I think he knows what he knows. He doesn't know what he doesn't know. He just thinks he knows beyond that. And he's not interested in what you have to say about any of it. That being said, the main revelation from Vindman was, well, there were a couple. Let's, before we get to exposing Adam Schiff as a complete and total fraud, I do want to play another clip that exposes him as a liar. Alex Vindman testified that the reason he did not go to his boss for reporting, you know, saying, I have a really big problem with this call. I'm shocked and appalled by what I heard, and I think it's dangerous and a threat to the Republic. The reason he didn't go to his boss, and he circumvented his boss, was because he said his boss was not available. That he just wasn't around that day. He couldn't get to him. Therefore, he had to go to the legal team inside his department, seek legal advice, and the legal team told him, don't tell anybody. And that's why he didn't bother telling his boss. Again, a dick move when you really get down to it, because that is going outside the chain of command. Yet this is what Vindman said. I couldn't go to Tim Morrison, who was his boss, because he wasn't available. Well, turns out later on in our story, as we smash cut forward to a little taste of reality, that Mr. Morrison was asked about this unavailability on his behalf by Congressman Brad Wenstrup of Ohio. This exchange is very telling because remember the context. Vindman had testified earlier that day that he did not go to Morrison because he was unavailable after hearing the call. What you're about to hear is Wenstrup and Morrison talking about what Vindman did that day, keeping in mind that Vindman was very upset by the call. It turns out he did actually interact with his boss, never brought up that he had a problem with the phone call. He just wanted to make some changes to the transcript, which is weird considering that there are 3 to 5 professionals whose job it is to work on that transcript. Why this egghead decided he had to correct it or try to correct it, who knows? But that's neither here nor there. What's telling is that they interacted at a time when, according to Vindman, Morrison was unavailable.
That same day. So today he said, I reported my concerns to Mr. Eisenberg. It is improper for the President of the United States to demand a foreign government investigate a U.S. citizen and political opponent. Now, he was going to Mr. Eisenberg with his concerns about the conversation, yet he did not, at any point on the edits, say that there should be a demand. And, you know, he didn't do that, but he did say that he didn't come to you with his concerns because you weren't available. But that same day, he came to you with edits. Was that correct?
I believe that's generally correct, yes, sir.
Okay. Well, he said you weren't available.
Interesting, right? Vindman says the reason he went to the legal team for advice on how to deal with the phone call, because it made him so wildly uncomfortable, was that his boss, Tim Morrison, was unavailable. Yet that very same day, he was in Morrison's office saying, I want to make some edits to the phone call. Now, the talk of the word demand there is that Vindman and the whistleblower, just coincidentally, happened to use that word demand in their testimony. Well, not the whistleblower's testimony. We haven't been able to hear from the whistleblower. But in Vindman's testimony earlier, behind closed doors, and in the whistleblower complaint, they said that the president made a demand for an investigation into Joe Biden of the Ukrainian president, yet there was no mention of demand. And in fact, when Vindman was running around trying to get so upset by the call in the afterglow, in the refractory period of the phone conversation between the two presidents, that he was so upset by that he had to go and talk to the lawyers, he wanted to make edits to the transcript that day, and nowhere did he mention anything about a demand. He didn't want to add the word demand. He didn't want to add an implied demand. It's weird. It's almost like Vindman is making it up as he goes along, or was making it up as he goes along, or was looking for an opportunity to start something and then found it, and is now trying, after the fact, to adjust his story to fit accordingly. That brings us to the whistleblower question. Vindman testified that he told a few people, about a half a dozen people, which is weird because in the whistleblower's complaint, the whistleblower says that he had heard information from about a half a dozen people on this phone conversation. So again, how much of that was firsthand? The whistleblower doesn't say who he heard from, and Vindman won't say who he talked to about the phone call. Well, that's not entirely true. He does freely admit that he talked to one person, just not another. It's an unbelievable exchange that exposes both Mr. Vindman, who doesn't like to be called Mr., and Chairman Adam Schiff for Brains as complete and total lying frauds. Listen to it's pretty long, and I'll stop it where it's appropriate and comment, but listen to this exchange between Nunes and Vindman, and then eventually Schiff.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, did you discuss the July 25th phone call with anyone outside the White House on July 25th or the 26th? And if so, with whom?
Yes, I did. My core function is to coordinate U.S. government policy, interagency policy, and I spoke to two individuals with regards to providing some sort of readout of the call.
Two individuals that were not in the White House.
Not in the White House, cleared U.S. government officials with appropriate need to know.
And what agencies were these officials with?
Department of State, Department of State Deputy Assistant Secretary George Kent, who is responsible for the portfolio Eastern Europe, including Ukraine, and a individual from the office of an individual in the intelligence community.
Oh, he almost coughed it up right there, didn't he? Oh, he almost went there. Well, now, wait a second. Because what's funny here is, notice how he willingly gives up that first name. He just says, I talked to Deputy Assistant Secretary George Kent over in the State Department because it's his job, blah, 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 so on and so forth. And then I talked to somebody in the intelligence community. Well, the intelligence community is a rather large group of people in this country, as you might suspect. It's a lot of people. The intelligence community is a nebulous term, could mean any number of things. Why would Why would Mr. Vindman not continue that name, that train of thought, and stop and simply say, "What a judge," and then just a member of the intelligence community? Well, which member? Is it the head of the CIA, or is it a janitor who happens to work at Langley, or just somewhere in between? Could just be somewhere in between. We don't know. It's because the person that he won't talk about, the person that he stopped himself, he almost slipped up and gave too much away, that person is the whistleblower. What's very funny and very telling about what comes next is that, or what comes out after, is that Vindman claims to not know the identity of the whistleblower. Also, Adam Schiff claims to not know the identity of the whistleblower. Therefore, Vindman refusing to say this person's name, and Adam Schiff, who will jump in, you'll hear in a few minutes, jump in and say, don't answer that. You don't have to answer that if you think there's a reasonable possibility that that's the one. Don't worry about it. Adam Schiff allegedly has no idea who the whistleblower is. So then why would Vindman know to stop? And why would Adam Schiff know to jump in if neither one of these two people know who the whistleblower is? Now, if you have a group of people and one of them is a rat, or one of them is a snitch, or one of them is the secret farter from Hardball last night, whatever it is. Somebody knows, one of them, let's just put it this way. You're in a group of people, and you know that somebody's screwing around on their wife. All right, you're in a group of friends, you're out at a couple's night, it's a game night, you got everybody over, you got the Jenga set up, it's a rockin' good time. And you know that somebody is screwing around on their wife. And in fact, everybody knows that somebody is screwing around on their wife. And you start making comments about affairs. There's something on TV that sets you off about that. And you go, hey, Bob, you know about that. And yeah, right. And hey, Johnny, you know about that. And then you skip over your friend Brad. And you go right over to Billy. Hey, Billy, how's it going? Well, if you're willing to make that joke about everybody in the room except Brad, I think Brad's wife is going to make for a very uncomfortable car ride home after that. Why didn't, if everybody knows that somebody's screwing around on their wife, don't know who, but somebody's doing it. And then something happens where everybody is named except for Brad. I think Brad's got some explaining to do. That's not necessarily true that Brad, it doesn't mean that Brad is the one having the affair. It would mean that, you know, everybody there kind of has a reason to suspect Brad. And again, it would make for an uncomfortable car ride home for Brad. But that's kind of what Vindman did. He's, oh yeah, I told this one and the other one and then the other one. And then I was walking around talking to lawyers. And then I told this one guy who I'm not going to talk about. Why won't you talk about him? You don't know who the whistleblower is, right, Alex Vindman? And Chairman Schiff jumps right in. And again, he is governing over these hearings from an alleged point of ignorance, even though the whistleblower reached out to his staff. He swears that was all it ever was, and he stuck his fingers in his ears when his staff told him that this guy came to them, and he says, la, 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 I don't want to know anything about it. I don't want nothing. Don't ever mention this to me again. I, as a member of Congress and chairman of the Intelligence Committee, love to live in a place of ignorance. Do not tell me this information. Yeah. If you believe that, I have a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. Let's continue listening to this audio because it just keeps getting better.
As you know, the intelligence community has 17 different agencies. What agency was this individual from?
If I could interject here, we don't want to use these proceedings.
It's our time,
I know,
Mr. Chair.
But we need to protect the whistleblower.
Please stop.
I want to make sure that there's no effort to out the whistleblower through the use of these proceedings. If the witness has a good faith belief that this may reveal the identity of the whistleblower, that is not the purpose that we are here for, and I want to advise the witness accordingly.
Now, that's a pretty neat trick. Adam Schiff jumps in and goes, you can see that Vindman is panicking, going, holy crap, I almost said it. I almost did it. I almost gave it away. And so Schiff jumps in and says, no, if you have a reasonable suspicion to believe that this person could be the whistleblower, don't ever give us the name. Well, Vindman doesn't know who the whistleblower is, so then how could he have any kind of suspicion, reasonable or otherwise, as to the identity of said whistleblower? Logic would dictate that he shouldn't, but then reality kind of interjects itself. And then Adam Schiff jumps in and says, well, don't answer that. Look, you're just discussing classified material. I love how, Vindman basically said, well, I talked to a bunch of people about it, but don't worry, they were all able to be read in on this. They all had the appropriate clearances. Well, how do we know? We need all of their names so that we can find out whether, in fact, you're telling the truth, Mr. Vindman. We do not look at classified material as on the honor system. We don't take your word for it, you know? Don't worry, I blabbed to everybody, but I made sure to check their clearance levels and make sure that they were in the proper food chain to be able to get this information. Well, we can't verify that because Vindman stopped short. Just because somebody works at the CIA does not mean that they, or even just because somebody has security clearance, doesn't mean that they should have access to this information. It's kind of important that we know who this person is that was told by Vindman so that we might vet them ourselves. We might find out whether or not Mr. Vindman violated the law in his fit of rage, so much so that he'd forgotten as he stormed into his boss's office to try and impose edits on the transcript that he forgot to mention, oh, by the way, I'm wildly upset by this and thinking about talking to the lawyers about this. I'm uncomfortable. No, he didn't do that, but he's very careful to hide this person's name. So then Devin Nunes notices this, and suddenly, the line of questioning turns very interesting because Schiff and Vindman are both pleading ignorance while protecting the same person. We have no idea who this whistleblower is, but we're not going to tell you about our buddy Eric because that would be wrong. And now, how would Schiff know that he's uncomfortable saying this because it is the whistleblower? Or maybe he's uncomfortable saying this because, realistically, if you look into it, whoever he told doesn't have the proper security clearance to have this information. Adam Schiff isn't interested in it whatsoever. He just pretends not to know who the whistleblower is and runs blocker to protect their star. It's not witness because he's never going to testify, but their star plant, the deep stater in La Resistance.
Mr. Vindman, you testified in your deposition that you did not know the whistleblower.
Ranking member, it's Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, please.
Lieutenant Colonel Vindman.
Well, suddenly Vindy gets a little uppity right there. No. You need to, you call me Lieutenant Colonel. I have earned that rank. Nunes, to his credit, complies, but realistically, a civilian, which members of Congress are, do not have to address military anybody as their rank, and congressional rules dictate that calling witnesses Mr. is perfectly acceptable, especially in the military. It's okay, but suddenly he's very upset, snaps at Nunes, because he recognizes he's painted himself into a corner. Actually, he's smeared himself into a corner with feces all around him. And how is he going to get out of this one? He knows that this is not going to play well in Peoria. It's going to be a little bit problematic for old Vindy, Vindiana Jones. I'm sure he likes to fancy himself. And he's mad. He gets testy. He snaps. And Nunes picks her. All right, yeah, sure, fine, Lieutenant Colonel. Let's get back to your lie.
You testified in the deposition that you did not know who the whistleblower was or is.
I do not know who the whistleblower is. That is.
Well, how is it possible for you to name these people and then out the whistleblower?
Per the advice of my counsel, I've been advised not to answer specific questions about members of the intelligence community.
Are you aware that this is the intelligence committee that's conducting an impeachment hearing?
Of course I am.
He knows exactly who the whistleblower is. They're buddies. They're buddies. The information had to have come from him because he's the only one to come out of the call crying, going, oh, my God, what are they doing to my sweet, sweet Ukraine? I must protect Ukraine, my motherland. This is so bad. Oh, no. Everybody else heard the phone call and said, meh, nothing there. Doesn't bother me at all. No big shake. And even the people who thought, well, that was inappropriate, but whatever, moving on. He was the only one who came running out like a chicken with its head cut off, going, I've got to talk to somebody. I must talk to somebody. And then he went and talked to somebody. And then he went and talked to a bunch of other people, too. And he's willing to say who they are, where they work, except for one person. But he doesn't know who the whistleblower is, except that he does know who the whistleblower is. I can't talk about that. That's an intelligence matter. Well, you're testifying before the intelligence community there, genius. It's our job to oversee the intelligence community. If you're running around blabbing to people in the intelligence community about this phone call that you shouldn't have been doing, we want to know, make sure that they can get that information, that they legally are entitled to that or whatever. Nope, can't do that. It's weird how that stops. Then later, soon after, Jim Jordan comes up. And Jim Jordan is just, whenever you get a chance to watch Jim Jordan examine a witness, it's well worth putting down your knitting or whatever the hell it is you do during these long marathons and pay specific attention, because there's going to be some squirming, and there is squirming here. Again, Jordan goes back to this point. If you don't know who the whistleblower is, if you really don't know, and since you're under oath and you said you don't know, you better really not know who the whistleblower is, because lying to Congress is a crime. I mean, it's not a crime when it's a Democrat and they're protected classes, but I mean, in general, in theory, lying to Congress under oath is a crime. And that would be a bit problematic because, as everybody knows who's ever watched a single episode of Law and Order, if you lie on the stand, if you lie under oath, your entire credibility on everything you say, even the stuff you're telling the truth about, comes into question, right? That's the way it works. So listen to this exchange between Jim Jordan and Alex Vindman and Adam Schiffhead.
Colonel, it's interesting. We deposed a lot of people in the bunker in the basement of the Capitol over the last several weeks, but of all those depositions, only three of the individuals we deposed were actually on the now somewhat famous July 25th phone call between President Trump and President Zelensky. There was you, the individual sitting beside you, Ms. Williams, and then there, were, of course, was your boss, Mr. Morrison, who I just read from his deposition. When we asked Ms. Williams, who she spoke to after the call about the call, she was willing to answer our questions, and chairmanship allowed her to answer our questions. When we asked Mr. Morrison, who he spoke to after the call about the call, he was willing to answer our question, and Mr. Schiff allowed, chairmanship allowed him to answer our question. But when we ask you, you first told us three individuals at the NSC, your brother and the two lawyers. And then you said there was a group of other people you communicated with, but you would only give us one individual in that group, Secretary Kent. And the chairman would only allow you to give us that name. When we ask you who else you communicated with, you would not tell us. So I want to know first, how many other people are in that group of people you communicated with outside the four individuals I just named?
Yes, Mr. Jordan, on a call readout, certainly after the first call, there were probably a half a dozen or more people that I read out. Those are people with the proper clearance and the need to know.
Now, again, it's very interesting here that all we have to go on is Vindman's words that they have the proper clearance and the need to know. Very important. You can have the clearance, but no need to know, and you're not supposed to go blabbing to people. You're only supposed to have access to the security clearance stuff that you're supposed to have access to. It's not just a giant pile of information sitting somewhere where, hey, man, you flash your badge. I got the clearance. Let me in. Let's go. Let's see what you got. I want to go see what today's state secrets are. Let's go wandering in to the secret room and read all of it. That's not how it really works. Now, you can get permission pretty easily because you have the clearances, but it is not up to a low-level Pentagon liaison, essentially a glorified Pentagon liaison, to determine that someone has a need to know. And since all we have to go on is his word, and he clearly knows who the whistleblower is and is hiding that and lying about it, I think we have to question him in other areas. I mean, I think so. It certainly seems like that would be relevant information to me, as if I were the prosecutor, I think I would want to know this information. And Schiff would want to know this information, if only to bolster the credibility of Vindman. You say, okay, who are these people? Let's look at their claim. Oh, you know what? Now that we know who they are and that we know what their jobs are and everything, they do, in fact, meet the proper criteria. So there's nothing wrong with this. Then your credibility elsewhere is bolstered. But for some weird reason, they don't want that kind of bolstering to his credibility. Why could that possibly be?
In this case, because of the sensitivity of the call and Mr. Eisenberg told me not to speak to anybody else, I only read out, outside of the NSC, two individuals.
Two individuals.
Das Kent and one other person.
And you're not willing to tell us who that other individual is?
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, point of order.
The gentleman suspend, counsel.
Mr. Chairman, I would ask you to enforce the rule with regard to disclosure, with regard to the intelligence officer.
Thank you, counsel. You know, as I indicated before, this committee will not be used to out the whistleblower. That same
Mr. Chairman,
necessity
of protecting the whistleblower. Can you first stop the time so I don't lose the time?
Will persist. You are recognized again, Mr. Jordan.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see how this is outing the whistleblower. The witness has testified in his deposition that he doesn't know who the whistleblower is. You have said, even though no one believes you, you have said you don't know who the whistleblower is. So how is this outing the whistleblower to find out who this individual is?
Jordan, this is your time for questioning. You can use it any way you like, but your question should be addressed to the witness. And your question should not be addressed to trying to out the whistleblower.
Well, okay.
Not trying to out the whistleblower. Now, if you just went in there and you said a list of names and the whistleblower happened to be among them, there would be, if you really didn't know who the whistleblower was, there would be no way of knowing whether or not you had mentioned the whistleblower's name. Also, there's, you know, the whistleblower could literally be anybody. So why would you even think that the whistleblower would be amongst the people you told? Unless you knew. And Adam Schiff, I love when George's like, yeah, you've said that you don't know who the whistleblower is. Nobody believes you. You're full of crap, Adam. We all know you're full of crap because you told the whole country that you had no contact with the whistleblower. Your staff had no contact. Nobody knows who the whistleblower is. And then it turns out that, oh, yeah, I mean, aside from the fact that we met with him and advised him how to go forward and Lord knows who else, we're not going to answer any questions about that this time. You know, you lie about it. You lie about it. You get caught, and then you say, well, now I'm telling you the truth, and I shall never address this issue ever again, and you just move on. Forgive me if I think that maybe your credibility is suspect to doubt. You know, just a little bit. I think you're a little bit open to perhaps a jaundiced eye when it comes to your truth-telling ability, especially when you are a noted partisan hack engaged in noted partisan hackery. That maybe, since you've proven a willingness to lie about things related to the president in the past to try and harm the president, I hearken back to, we have proof of collusion, it will all come out soon and the whole country will see. And that kind of went the way of the dodo after the Mueller report. We were promised things and we had nothing delivered. Forgive me if we don't take your word on this one, Adam Schiff, but when you control the gavel and you have Nancy Pelosi as your leader, you don't really have to worry. I mean, who's going to call Adam Schiff out on this? Jim Jordan did. Devin Nunes did. Other members of the committee did. People in the media and conservative media did. But conservative media is infinitesimal relative to the rest of the media. So why would Adam Schiff care about this? Well, just to put a fine point on it, let's get in the Wayback Machine and travel to a different time, a crazier time, when things were very radically different. It was, last week, when there was an exchange with Adam Schiff, in which he claims unambiguous, just to put a fine point on it, that he had no idea who the whistleblower is. He's got no idea, no clue whatsoever. He just happens to jump in when a witness is about to talk about a person. No, that the whistleblower or the person that the witness doesn't know is the whistleblower because the witness doesn't know who the whistleblower is. And Adam Schiff doesn't know is the whistleblower because Adam Schiff doesn't know who the whistleblower is. But for some reason, he knows when to jump in to potentially protect the whistleblower. Is your head feeling spinny yet? Is your nose hurting from all the BS that you're inhaling from this audio yet? Well, again, here is Adam Schiff in an exchange just last week.
Just to ask a clarifying question, do you anticipate when we might vote on the ability to have the whistleblower in front of us, something you, of the 435 members of Congress, you are the only member who knows who that individual is, and your staff is the only staff of any member of Congress who's had a chance to talk with that individual. We would like that opportunity. When might that happen in this proceeding today?
First, as the gentleman knows, that's a false statement. I do not know the identity of the whistleblower, and I'm determined to make sure that identity is protected.
How can you protect someone's identity when you don't know whose identity that is? And how was it that Adam Schiff happened to jump in just at the right moment to stop Vindman, another person who does not know who the whistleblower is, from accidentally revealing too much information about the whistleblower? Anybody out there believe either one of these two frauds? No, no rational person is out there thinking that they are being told the truth in these clips. So, if they're willing to lie about this, what else are they willing to lie about? If they're willing to collude and cover up this, what else are they willing to collude and cover up? Well, when you control the gavel, you get to control everything, and we may never know, but we now at least have this little nugget of audio, this bit of audio gold out there that is exposing both of these men as liars. And if they're both exposed as liars, I don't honestly know how you take what either of them have to say seriously, or literally, or honestly. Because you really can't. Speaking of liars and goofballs and frauds, Eric Swalwell was up there yesterday, and I just want to play a short clip. We talked a lot about Eric Swalwell yesterday on the program, and I felt a little guilty about that, just in case it was, you know, big fart gate, in case it was the coffee mug or Chris Matthews, and it wasn't really Eric Swalwell as he stopped and pushed out some gas on Hardball on National Tech. It might not have been him. You never know. So I just want to give him his due and give him his moment in the sun. He's a member of this committee in good standing. So let's just listen to some of the deep probing thoughts that Eric Swalwell forced out yesterday.
Mr. Swalwell, thank you both. Lieutenant Colonel Vindman, I think the follow-up question that my colleague from New York did not ask you but is relevant for everyone at home. Isn't it true that the Department of Defense had certified that the anti-corruption requirements of Ukraine had been met when the hold was put on by the president?
That is correct.
Now, Mr. Jordan suggested that the president did something none of us expected by releasing that call transcript. You listen to the call, is that right, Lieutenant Colonel?
Oh, I just had to. The only way that could be funnier for me, and maybe it's my juvenile sense of humor, the only way that could be funnier for me is if it went on longer. Because the first one is a And you're like, was that just the microphone? Was that a coffee mug? What's going on? And then they let him rip. Good old Eric Swalwell. You won't be remembered for much, but farting on national television, allegedly, we have to throw in allegedly, will be what sticks with you. I'll never let that go. Now, every time I hear Eric Swalwell, I'm going to think he's farting, and I may have to add fart sounds to every clip I play of Eric Swalwell going forward. All right, so I mean, the rest of the hearing was rather boring. It was a whole bunch of people giving their opinions, even though some of them actually were on the call, and they said, well, I didn't think there was anything wrong with the call, and Democrats were like, yeah, but don't you think something was wrong with the call? And they said, no, there's nothing wrong with the call. There was no quid pro quo. There was no attempted bribery. There was none of this stuff. So that was, 15? I don't even know how long it went. It started, I guess I do know how long it went. It went on for about 11 and a half hours. It started at 9 o'clock, and it ended around 8:30. So there, I just did basic math, time math, which is tough. There are a couple of other things I want to touch on. There won't be any more Eric Swalwell farting sound effects throughout the rest of the program, probably. There was a big story yesterday that the left was very, very upset by, and it was from AFP, Agence France-Presse, but it was also by Reuters put it out, Associated Press put it out. It was on all the news sites. They all run the wire services, CNN, MSNBC, NBC News, all of them. They just took this as gospel. It was too good to fact check, too good to do their own reporting on, and it made the liberal point and thereby made Donald Trump look bad, which again is more than enough for them to forego any semblance of journalism. The headline from AFP yesterday, breaking: more than 100,000 children in migration-related U.S. detention, UN, meaning the UN has study, this story, whatever. And, well, that was all they needed to know. They were off and running, 100,000 sweet, sweet, nourishing, illegal alien children in custody. How many are ripped from the arms or ripped from the bosom, should I say, of their parents? How many are separated? This is an atrocity. This is near genocide levels and an outrage, and we should all be ashamed of ourselves as Americans, and we should storm the White House and burn it to the ground and demand that the president be removed right now. There's only one short, small, tiny, little inconvenient problem with all of that. That story has since been retracted, not corrected, retracted. They've deleted the entire story. The Agence France-Presse tweeted out, AFP is withdrawing this story. The author of the report has clarified that his figures do not represent the number of children currently in migration-related U.S. detention, but the total number of children in U.S. or in migration-related U.S. detention in 2015. We will delete the story, end quote. Now, I usually have a pretty good memory for this kind of stuff, and the fact recall is something I happen to be good at, despite years of trying to destroy as many brain cells as I possibly could. But I can't quite remember who was president during 2015. Does anybody remember that? Because 2015 was a few years ago. And this story was not a story then. So why would that not have been news? And why, in fact, would the story then not be there were 100,000 migrant children in migration-related detentions? Why would that not be a story in and of itself? Why would you retract the whole thing? You should then go back and rework the you've got data. The story is about the data. Why wouldn't you go back and say, well, all right, well, we got to rework this thing and put it in its proper context, right? No, but because Barack Obama was president of the United States in 2015, and all bad things to liberals, bad being in air quotes to liberals, none of that started until Donald Trump took office, that we had to just wipe the internet clean of this story. And this story really was wiped clean from the internet and replaced with, sorry about that, we've pulled the story. We've pulled the story. Now, NBC News, to their credit, doesn't really care about facts. If they think that they can hammer Donald Trump, they're going to keep doing it. They don't really care if they have to use a lie or as a diving board or a launching off point to do it. So they didn't pull the story themselves. They did change it to be somewhat more accurate. But here's their new headline. UN expert corrects claim on children in U.S. migration detention. The subheadline is very, very NBC News. The subheadline is, nonetheless, the U.S. is holding far more children than other countries for which the UN has reliable figures. See, that's the kicker, isn't it? Reliable figures. I would argue, and many could argue, that, and would argue, rightly so, that every child in China is essentially being held in a detention center because they're communist and their country is a prison if you are not sufficiently cool or in the good graces of the government with your social point score, you can have your travel even within your prison restricted. I don't know how you get more oppressive than that. And then they have the story because they ran the Associated Press story, the Associated Press editor's note. An earlier version of this article was based on a quotation from Manfred Nowak. Manfred Nowak. You know, that might be one of my all-time favorite names now, Manfred Nowak, author of a UN report on detained children, who said that more than 100,000 children are being held in migrant detention in the United States. Nowak later corrected the number, saying it was a 2015 figure that referred to the cumulative number of migrant children held in detention at any point during that year. The article below from the Associated Press replaces the earlier version. Well, why not? Why isn't what happened in 2015 news? Seems like what happened in 2015 would be news if the idea of holding migrant children at all in any form of detention center on any level is news now. What happened 4 years ago, it would be news as well on the same subject, right? If only to give historical context. It would be interesting to know if under Barack Obama in that calendar year there were 100,000 sweet, sweet, nourishing illegal alien children, or if that number is more or less now. It'd be a good point of comparison. But in order to make that, since we don't have the data for the current year just yet, the story, freestanding in and of itself, about 2015, should be news. But it's not news. They just get rid of the inconvenient truth of Barack Obama, which is telling because if you look at this new Associated Press story up at NBC News, there is no mention of who the President of the United States was in 2015. You could not be more transparently biased if you tried. You can't make this stuff up. It was big news. Donald Trump, that evil Donald Trump, is holding 100,000 kids. And then, oh, no, wait, it was Barack Obama. Anyway, look, you know, sometimes you got to hold some kids. I don't know what you want from me, but that's just the way that the cookie crumbles. It is absolute textbook, unequivocal media bias. What was a story is suddenly no longer a story. It's weird how that works. I tell you all the time that D after their name is not, in fact, a D. It is a shield, and it protects them from any kind of criticism in every possible way you can imagine. God, it's so good to be a Democrat. Speaking of which, this is another telling instant of media bias. You're not going to care about the content of this because who cares about the mayor of Muncie, Indiana? But it is textbook when it comes to media bias. The New York Times cares about it. They cover all this crap all the time. Well, their headline, Dennis Tyler, mayor of Muncie, Indiana, indicted on theft of government funds. The subheadline, Mr. Tyler, whose administration had been under investigation for corruption allegation for years, was taken into custody at his home on Monday. That sounds terrible. And you read it, mayor of Muncie, Indiana, was indicted Monday on charges of illegally accepting cash payments, bringing to a head a multi-year federal investigation of corruption allegations that have engulfed his administration. The mayor, Dennis Tyler, 76, is accused of using his influence to award lucrative contracts and accepting $5,000 from Tracy Barton, the former superintendent of sewer maintenance, see local stuff, and engineering for Muncie Sanitation District, blah, blah, blah. If convicted, he could face up to 10 years in prison and a $250,000 fine. Have you noticed anything missing from this story thus far? Party identification of the mayor of Muncie, Indiana. So to search for that, we go down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 in the eighth paragraph. You get to the eighth paragraph. Now, I don't know how many readers of the New York Times are itching for news about political corruption in Muncie, Indiana, but they'd have to go eight paragraphs into this story that most people won't to find the following sentence. In January, Mr. Tyler, a Democrat, announced he would not seek re-election for a third term. His term ends on December 31st. Isn't that it? Why would you wait eight paragraphs to give a party identification in a story about a politician who has been credibly accused and arrested for taking bribes? Well, we know the answer. It's more of a rhetorical question. I just find that interesting that even when it comes down to the mayor of Muncie, Indiana, they make sure to bury the party ID if the party ID is the D. Finally today, one last bit of insanity, because why not? Everything is insane today. The left is completely nuts. And they're so nuts that they turn on each other, that they end up offending each other. They've set up so many different ways to offend somebody that it's inevitable that they're going to offend people. And so many of the left want to be offended. They're ready to be offended. They're excited. They're sexually aroused at being offended. This one comes to us from the UK Telegraph. The headline, "Whites can be black if they wish," says Lecturers Union. We all owe Rachel Dolezal a major, major apology. I don't know if they make a Hallmark card for that, but they should. The story, "People should be allowed to identify as black no matter what color they are born," a lecturer's union has said. The University and College Union, UCU, which represents more than one, you think, well, what is this group? Is it just nuts? Is it lunatics? Well, they're college professors, so yes, but it's not fringy, that's for sure, which represents more than 100,000 university lecturers and staff, set out its position on whether people should be able to self-identify as different races or genders. God help us all. The paper, UCU Position on Trans Inclusion, it stated, quote, "The UCU has a long history of enabling members to self-identify, whether that is being black, disabled, LGBT, or women." Where's the Q? Don't they care about the Q? "The union stance was criticized by some of its own members as nonsensical. Kathleen Stock, a professor of philosophy at the University of Sussex, wrote on Twitter, 'I'm still a member of UCU, but Christ, they make it hard when they publish this nonsensical anti-intellectual propaganda.'" The anti-intellectual propaganda, it's about the race, that you can identify as a different race, not that a man can suddenly say, "Hey, man, I feel like a woman." That's not nonsensical. This person would be run out of university if they'd said that. But at least for now, you can say that somebody who identifies as a different race is crazy. Next year, if the Democrats, if the progressives in the UK, if the Liberal Party, if they think they can eke a couple of more votes out of it, then it will change. The debate over racial self-identification has become heated in recent years. Last November, Anthony Lennon, a white theater director who describes himself as a, quote, African born again, drew criticism for securing public funding intended to help ethnic minorities develop their stage careers. Don't you love that? It never ends. If somebody thinks they can get money out of it or attention out of it, they'll identify as an animal, as a footstool, whatever you got. That's why reality matters so much. So many people are denying it. Now, this just reminds me of the situation with trans athletes in women's sports. You notice that the men are entering the women's sports because they say they identify as women, and they're dominating, they're setting new records, they're wiping out women out of women's sports. If we're all the same and we're interchangeable and whatever you feel like you are and we all have to pretend it, why isn't there a equal or even any influx of women who identify as men entering men's sports and dominating? Why is that? It's almost as if there's some sort of biological impediment to that happening or something like that. I don't know. I assume thinking about it too much would be some kind of hate crime or something, and I wouldn't want to do that. I'm a caring, tolerant person. That's all the time we have for today, ladies and gentlemen. You can email me, Derek@dailycaller.com. If you want to enter to win the Jerome Hudson book, do that. Please do that by 10 p.m. on Thursday. So that gives you a day and a half, or a day, almost 2 days. Make it so. Good luck to you. You can email me anything you want to that address as well. And check out the Patreon website, patreon.com/DerekHunterPodcast. My book has gone back up in prices. I knew it would on Amazon. But a little pro tip, over at Walmart.com, it's still on sale for $5.99. So if you haven't bought it yet, Outrage Incorporated, How the Liberal Mob Ruins Science, Journalism, and Hollywood. What are you waiting for? Kwanzaa is coming. Christmas is upon us. Festivus is around the corner. And my book really brings out the Festivus in the rest of us. Also, it makes for good Thanksgiving reading and or ammunition if you want to throw it at some idiot at your table. Hopefully you won't have an idiot at your table, but just in case, have my book ready. So go to walmart.com and search my name and the title. You have to put in Outrage. Just put in Derek Hunter and Outrage, and it will show up because apparently they separate the words, and there's a whole bunch of crap that comes up on Amazon, or on, not Amazon, on walmart.com. They should really, they're worth that much money. They could refine their search engine. Just saying. Anyway, we'll be back here tomorrow with week two, day two, witness seven, eight, and I don't know. I can't keep track of it. We've got another presidential debate tomorrow night, too. The Lord help us all. I'll see you Thursday.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see how this is outing the whistleblower. The witness has testified in his deposition that he doesn't know who the whistleblower is. You have said, even though no one believes you, you have said you don't know who the whistleblower is. So how is this outing the whistleblower to find out who this individual is?
Jordan.